So welcome, John Maloney. Hello.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're glad that you're here, and we're here at the Balham Comedy Festival, which you began 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. How did that come about?
Dave Vickers, who's run the festival with me, we sort of co-produced it, as it were, has been running one of the most successful comedy clubs in Britain for the last 30 years. And it was literally over a beer one night where I'd done a show, and I just said, why don't we try a festival? And he said, well, you know, how can we do this? Who can we get? And I said, well, give me 8 phone calls, and I'll see where we go. And, you know, in that kind of romantic, apocryphal way, 72 hours later, I phoned him and said, well, we've got a festival if you want it, because I've contacted 8 sort of very good friends of mine who are also superb stand-up comics, who have the kind of profile who could, you know, justify putting a festival on around them, as it were. And that's what we did last year. We ran it over 4 nights last year. This year we've run it over 8 nights. And we've had a more diverse, we've had people from people who are less experienced coming along but trying their Edinburgh previews and stuff, as well as, you know, old farts like me who've been going for years. I mean, Lee Mack was on tonight, for example, and bless him, Lee said, I really enjoyed that, and, you know, I might do a one-man show next year. And we went, well, you'd be more than welcome. This year, Al Murray came back, Steve Amos came back, Ed Byrne came back, because they wanted to. You know, they weren't forced into this. And in a way, comics of that experience and ilk have... They miss the circuit a little bit. You know, they miss the camaraderie of being around other comics.
Fantastic. And everyone knows you as a comedian, John. Mm-hmm. But what a lot of people don't know is that you actually started out as a qualified teacher.
Yeah, I was a languages teacher. I taught German and French. I studied linguistics at Royal Holloway. But before that, I was also a folk musician.
Okay.
That was my original training, if you like. I play some variously unfashionable instruments, accordion, for example, which is a frighteningly unsexy instrument, especially if you try and do kind of air accordion in front of your mirror. It looks very weird. It looks slightly perverted. Oscar Wilde once said, the definition of a gentleman is somebody who can play the accordion but chooses not to. And he's possibly right. It didn't exactly get me the ladies when I was 14 or 15. Come back to my room and listen to me play the Londonderry air on the accordion rather than Stairway to Heaven.
And do you still play it?
In moments of dank loneliness and depression, when I feel that the only thing I can do is stare at the wall as the paint melts before my acerbic eyes, I might take it out then.
And you said that you're a linguistics teacher.
Yeah.
Do you use that?
Bit of material. Mm. I do a little Mickey taken out of the German language about how logical it is. So, yeah, I bring some of my previous experiences to my stand-up. In fact, quite a lot of my experiences. I'm quasi-famed at the moment for doing a routine about my cat. And the routine is actually quite true. You know, I took Edward to the vet, and when I got home, I said to my missus, I said, you can't believe it, 71 quid to keep a cat overnight, a hotel's 39, and she went, write it. So a lot of my stuff just comes from observation, as most comics, to be fair. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not particularly forensic about sitting down and writing a gag, and I don't know, I think I used to be a bit more like that, but now I've got sort of aged and wizened. It's more the things of life that perturb me rather than searching for the next fantastic one-liner. Although that's what I started off as. When I first did the stand-up show on the BBC, I was doing all sort of one-liners. You know, I went to a dyslexic rave, they were taking F. There's a bloke in the corner trying to inject a heron. I went bobsleighing, I killed 20 bobs. I went to the supermarket, I bought some HP sauce. I had to pay 6p a week over 3 months. I went to see a child psychologist. He was shit, he was only 7. I had problems, he wanted to play Kaplunk. You know, so I did start off by doing those kind of one-linery because that was the easiest thing to do at the time. I remember one I'd forgotten from ages ago was I said, when I was a kid, I had a very strange ability, autokinesis, the ability to move stuff just by looking at it. I remember being at a disco once, I looked at this girl and she fucked off. You know, so those are the kind of gags I was writing then. But I've written more story stuff now.
And do you think audiences differ depending on where you are in the country?
I think they... Not really, not really. I think if I went to Glasgow and just talked about the tube system in London or something very parochial like that, that there could be a switch off point. But my stuff is very sort of everymanish now. So the fact that if I do a fairly long routine about taking my cat to the vet, that isn't just a national routine, that's international. I can go to Australia, Canada, the US. I was in Norway recently. I did that routine, and we all have the same things happen when, you know, in a given situation. So I don't find anything particularly variable in an audience. You know, if they want to find it funny and they're up for it, well, hopefully they do.
And who are your comedy heroes?
John Hegley, Dave Allen, Les Dawson, Tommy Cooper. Yeah, I mean, Hegley personally, because when I was young and I started, he was so encouraging. He used to run a show in Islington called The Nuclear Family on a Saturday morning in the pub called The Pied Bull in Islington. And it was like midday till 2 o'clock. And I was terrible. Most comics are rubbish when they start. And you kind of should be. If you're polished when you start, you've got no soul. That's possibly unfair. But hold on. No, it isn't. you know, you should be making mistakes when you start. But John, as with actually Dave here at Banana, we'll see potential in someone. You know, I was flaying around trying to find what the ideas actually were, but then it'd be a little kernel of something that was good, and John would say, I enjoyed that, John. Why don't you come back in 2 weeks, John? All right, John. All right, I'll see you 2 weeks, John. And, you know, we just have those very clipped conversations like we do now when I phoned him up to do the gig. Hello, John. Hello, John. Want to do a gig, John? Yes, John. When is it, John? July, John. All right, John. Done. So Hegley personally, but in terms of watching people's craft, I think Dave Allen and Les Dawson are unsurpassable. And well, I haven't seen anybody as good as them yet, even though there are brilliant comics out there. There were tons of brilliant comics, but they are the ones who floated my boat.
Now, our listeners won't realise, but your son has been seen at many of your gigs. Do you think your son or daughter might follow you into comedy?
Well, I hope not, because I don't want them to have the same bitter disappointment that I've had for the last 25 years. I want them to wake up every morning and feel the joys of spring, rather than thinking, oh, I'm on the M62, I shouldn't have fallen asleep in the car as you're trundling towards a lorry heading towards you. But possibly. Look, don't get me wrong, this is the best job I've ever had, and I've only had two jobs. But this one comes first out of two. I've seen the world, I've stayed in fantastic places, I've met brilliant people, I've played some incredible venues, and through this business, I've been allowed, through a kind of process of elimination almost, to meet some of my heroes, which is lovely as well, you know, because I've got the time off to be able to do it. I remember once, believe it or not, in this pub, Michael Stipe from REM was in this pub one afternoon, and the landlady phoned me up and said that, she said, this is a terrible Northern Irish accent, but she went, that wee baldy fella that you like, that wee baldy fella, he's in the pub here now. And I went, Michael Stipe? She went, yeah, that's the man, he's sitting here now having a drink. So I popped down to the pub, and Dermot, who used to work here, I said to Dermot, where is he? And Dermot said, that's him in the corner. And those kind of things can only happen if you do a job like this. If you're still teaching, you can't sort of put your lesson plan down and go, look, I'll be back in a minute, but my hero's in my local pub.
And in many parts of the world, comedians are thrown in jail for making jokes criticising the ruling regime.
Yes, they are, aren't they?
If you face the same risk, do you think you'd still be a comedian?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you have no enemies, you have no principles. So, you've got to stand up for something. Good Lord, you can't be supine about everything. And unfortunately, most people are. But I was brought up quite politically, you know, to be politically aware from a young age. I mean, my dad was a trades unionist. I'd come from an Irish family, and so, you know, the Irish in London, it wasn't particularly easy for us at certain times during the Troubles. You know, there'd be like a bomb would go off, and I'm not for bombs going off, but a bomb would go off in you know, somewhere, and then my mum and dad would go into a shop and wouldn't be served because of their accent. So I've sort of seen that they're only minor injustices compared to what happens, but it's an example of us feeling at the time, hold on, there's something wrong here. And I, so, you know, I'd like to think I'm quite a principled person. I think probably other people would say that about me as well. But that's something which has only happened, I think, in probably the last 3 or 4 years that my level of principle has reached the level where I'm happy with it, or rather where I was always happy with it, but other people weren't. So principle is such an important thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, but when you talk about being a principled person, it's so difficult not to come across as righteous. That's the problem, is that people go, oh, look at him, Mr. Conscience, Mr. Lefty, Mr. This, Mr. That, Mr. The Other. And you think, why? Because I was the only one who said there might be something wrong here.
Well, what does freedom of expression mean to you?
Freedom of expression to me says that you should be allowed to say what you think. But then I know that is, again, such a kind of minefield of... There were certain things, jokes, for example, there were areas of comedy that I wouldn't wander into, because I find them slightly tasteless. Not even slightly tasteless, I find them tasteless. I think there can be a kind of passive but prevalent misogyny out there sometimes. Now, I do jokes about me missus, I do, but I just don't feel they're hateful.
And I know you as a huge supporter of Amnesty.
Absolutely.
And we are a movement of ordinary people standing up for human rights. And why does our work strike a chord with you?
Because it is for ordinary people. And the fact that you're apolitical, you know, and that's so important, because I don't think I've ever met anybody in my travels, and I've met some of the most cynical, horrible bastards, I don't think I've met anybody who's had a bad word to say about Amnesty. It's one of those things, one of those organisations where you can't slag them off, because there's nothing to slag off. You know, you're just doing the right thing at the right time for the right people, and that, by a process of osmosis, your ideas of freedom, expression, and thought, just changes things. It changes passive people into active people, because if you explain to them, well, what's Amnesty? Well, this is what they actually do. It's so hard to disagree with it. It's that simple, really. I'm sorry, I wish I'd been more eloquent.
No, that's a great answer, thank you. Here at Amnesty International and across the comedy circuit, you're known as one of the nicest people in the business.
My Lord.
What keeps you grounded?
Statements like that, really. That can't do you any harm, can it? I don't think I've pissed off a lot of people. Probably have. I don't know, you've really thrown me by saying such a nice thing. I don't know, I can't really answer that. It's nice when people say nice things about you. And I'd like to think that I've helped people who are developing their careers and given advice to people on the way up and you know, perhaps on the way down. No, you've got me there.
You're up at the Edinburgh Festival in August hosting some of the Amnesty Secret Comedy podcasts for listeners thinking about going or subscribing.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what they can expect and why they should look us up?
Well, they should look you up because it's, you know, possibly one of the most sort of valid movements, system of thought that we have in free society. So that's why.
Well, thank you very much, John Maloney.
Thank you.